Okay. Welcome to week 7 of Koheles, titled Struggle and Frustration, because why not? First, a couple of notes from last time, actually. First of all, when I was going through the places where the word Hevel shows up in Tanakh, and I tried to show how you have some uses that mean nothing, not substantive, not enduring, evanescent, and then you have another use that shows up with idolatry, and then you have another use, specifically in Mishlei, that in general it means things that are false and corrupt. And I said, like, all of these interrelate in very obvious ways. But I mentioned as I was going through it that the use in Yonah and in Tehillim of Havlei Shav, which I had originally branded as being part of the nothing, not substantive, not enduring, really felt like it could probably fit into the idolatry category. And I went looking deeper into it with classic commentary, they put it in the idolatry category. So that's just a correction from last time. And it doesn't change anything in terms of the substance of what we're saying, but I thought that would be worth noting. So that was one point. Second point is that I mentioned last week at the very end that the Metzudat David, Rabbi David Altshuler, renders Havel Havalim as an imperative. You should treat Hevel as Hevel. It's an instruction to you. Havel Havalim. Those things that are meaningless, treat them as meaningless. So I found over Yom Tov, I was looking at Ibn Ezra at the end of Koheles, and lo and behold, he brings the idea as well. He doesn't adopt it, but he does mention it, and it's in source number 2 on your sheet. He says, V'yesh omrim ki havel lashon tzivoy v'enyin kemo azov. Some say havel, it is an instruction, like saying, abandon it, abandon hevel. That's the way that he brings. Ibn Ezra is a lot of fun, by the way, on Koheles. If you ever have a chance to read, nothing is fun on Koheles, but if you have a chance to read Ibn Ezra on Koheles, he's a lot of fun, because Ibn Ezra in general in Tanakh is very comfortable telling you when he disagrees with something, but over and over again in Koheles, I should do a search to see how many times, he brings an explanation and he says, "Begamze hevel." That's his line. The last point on that, just also, last time when I mentioned Rabbi Altshuler, I identified him as being 19th century, so I thank my emailer who corrected me, and it's actually 18th century, which I think I mentioned once a while back, but yeah, I got it wrong when I said it during the shiur. Janine.
I was just curious, when you say that Havel refers to idols,
in particular cases.
And so I know it's talking about idols, but it's, you know, Shehem Nishlachavim, the Havel, the Reek.
Yeah.
Like, is it just calling them nothingness as opposed to being a word for
idols? Right, so that's what I mean when I say that all of these explanations go together. Like, you could read a lot of them that way, but as an example, the first Hevel that I mentioned like that in Tanakh is the one in Parshas Ha'azinu, right, where Hashem says, Ki asuni behavlehem. They angered me with their Hevel. In context of the sentence, it's Heim kinuni below el, Ki asuni behavlehem. Right? So the low el is the parallel to the Hevel. You could legitimately say, yeah, but it just means it's a nothing. But it's very clearly a reference to a specific nothing. And, you know, it's the idolatrous nothing. You know, similarly, I gave you the reference to Melachim Aleph, which I will now flip to, chapter 16, where the term is used multiple times. So, in 16, I think it was 26. I think it was that usage. There we go. Malachim Aleph 16:26. So it's talking about a king, a sinful king, a surprise in Malachim. His name is Omri. And it says that he went in all the ways of Yeravam ben Nevat and his sins that he caused Israel to sin to anger Hashem, God of Israel, behavlehem. So it doesn't mean that he angered God by having the Jews pursue things that were nothing. It's specifically the idols. So that's what, why I sort of break it out as its own definition, even though it is absolutely connected to the other definitions. Okay. Other notes before we go into struggle and frustration? Nope. Okay. Struggle and frustration it is then. So we are going to talk about, I hope, the word amal, and then we get into ka'as, and if there's time, ruach ra'a. Okay, a fine collection of invective. So we start with the word amal. I would render amal, and we'll see this, as the pain of human endeavor. I think I mentioned at the end of the class last time that whereas Hevel, we said, shows up at least 38 times in this book, amal is a close second. It's at least 35 times in this book. Sometimes as a noun, sometimes not, but it's always, but it's here over and over and over again. And to approach what amal means, again, like with Hevel, I want to see how it's used elsewhere in Tanakh. And I think you really have two uses of it in Chumash, and then in Tanakh, you find both used. The word amal shows up in Chumash first. In Bereishis, you can see the references in source number 3, Bereishis chapter 41, sentence 51. Bereishis 41:51. So this is talking about Yosef in Mitzrayim, Yosef in Egypt. The background noise will fade soon, it's just between periods here. As of next week, there won't be any background noise because they'll be in finals, and their finals end before 1:30. So, chapter 41, sentence 51. And what it says is, Vayikra Yosef Hashem HaBachor Menashe. Yosef calls the firstborn from him and Asenaz Menashe. Ki Nashani Elokim es kol Amali. Hashem made me forget all of my Amal. Ve'ez kol Beis Avi and all of my father's house as well. Now the truth is, as I'm saying this, I'm wondering a little bit. I'd want to look at the commentators and see what they do with it, because you could read this use of amal not as painful struggle. In other words, my first way to read it was, it's talking about painful struggle. However, it could mean the bad conduct that was done to me. Amali, what they did to me, the bad conduct, because we're going to see that's the second meaning of amal. Sometimes amal is painful struggle. Sometimes amal is bad conduct. So it could be bad conduct. I'm not sure. An example that I think is more clear, but the truth is now I'm wondering, you could actually play with this one also, is a more famous pasuk. It's in the Haggadah. Devarim chapter 26, sentence 7, describing how Hashem saw the suffering of the Jews in Egypt, we say Hashem saw ve'es amaleinu ve'es lachatzeinu, our amal, which I was thinking of in terms of painful struggle, although it could be, again, the bad conduct that was done to us, I suppose, just like the lachatz is something that was brought upon us. One that's much more clear, and this is will conclude the Chumash references, is in Bamidbar chapter 23, sentence 21. Bamidbar 23:21. And this is in Balak's curses / blessings of the Jewish people. And he says, Lo hibit aven b'Yaakov. God did not look upon aven. Aven is evil, corruption. In Yaakov. V'lo ra'a amal b'Yisrael. And God doesn't see amal in Israel. So there, amal is very clearly parallel to aven, and it means bad action, bad conduct, things you're not supposed to be doing. God does not see Israel engaged in such things. And this is Bilam saying that Hashem looks kindly on the Jewish people. Hashem sees the Jewish people to be good, and Hashem associates himself with us. So what I'm saying here, and it's a little confusing because I just, offered to retranslate the first two uses, but at the very least, we have one use of amal in Chumash that is clearly bad conduct, and we have two other uses, one describing Yosef's experience in Egypt, and the other one describing the Jews and their suffering in Egypt, which seem to refer to painful struggle, although you could stretch it and say it refers to the bad things that are done to Yosef and to the Jews. Whichever way we take the uses in Bereishis and Devarim, those first ones, Tanakh very clearly has both meanings. Some books of Tanakh have only a handful of uses, and it's hard to find a pattern. So, for example, the word amal only shows up twice in the book of Shoftim. The first time, some of you may know by heart. That's a hint. What in Shoftim do people know by heart? What thing in Shoftim do people know by heart? Shiras Devorah, right? The Song of Devorah. Some of us, when we were in school, were required to memorize it. Although, it's really, it's sentence 26. Depends if you got that far. But it talks about the Halmut Amelim, right? The hammer of the workman who has a hammer. The other use is in chapter 10, sentence 16 in Shoftim, and it's very clearly about painful struggle, Amal Yisrael, under our enemies. Yirmiyahu uses the word Amal only once, and I gave you the references on the sheet there. Yirmiyahu 20:18, I'm skipping the Yeshaya one for a reason. The Yirmiyahu reference on the sheet is Amal V'yagon. So that's struggle and sorrow. Yonah has the word amal just once. In the last chapter, the story with the kikayon, right? That plant that grows so quickly, right? So if you remember the criticism Hashem gives him, you're all upset about the kikayon, asher lo amalta bo, which you didn't work for. So those uses, the two in Shoftim, the one in Yirmiyahu, the one in Yonah, seem to be amal as painful struggle. On the other hand, it appears twice in Habakkuk. We read Habakkuk for the Haftarah on Shavuos. It appears twice in the first chapter in Habakkuk, not in the Haftarah part. And there, it very clearly is about bad conduct. In the first use, in 1:3, it's parallel to aven, corruption. In the second use, it's parallel to ra, bad. I don't know, would it be more useful if we saw some of these in the text? Take a fast look at the Habakkuk one. The Habakkuk chapter 1, sentence 3. It's in the Treyasar, right? The two smaller books of the prophets. Chapter 1, sentence 3. This chapter is a very important chapter in Tanakh. Joyce, you were there. Alina, maybe you were there also. When we learned Habakkuk at Shari Shemayim, it was like 11 or 12 years ago. And the first chapter is his complaint about injustice. So he writes, Lama sar'eni aven va'amal tabit. He's addressing God. Why do you show me aven, corruption, va'amal tabit? Why do you look on and see amal? Kind of the opposite of Bilam's line, right? Bilam said, God doesn't see these things in Israel. And he says, you're showing them to me. You're showing me aven and amal. So amal there is corruption, bad conduct. And then in chapter 1, sentence 13, you have it as well, where he says, Tahor einayim me ra'os ra, vehabit el amal lo suchal. one of pure eyes, who doesn't see ra, who doesn't see bad, who cannot look upon amal. So those are uses of amal to mean bad conduct. Rose, you were going to say?
No, nothing.
Okay. Yeshaya uses it both ways, as you see in group 1 and group 2 in source number 4 on the sheet. In one case, he uses it to refer to struggle. In another two cases, he uses it to refer to bad conduct. He has both. And then in Mishle, you find both uses as well. Take a look in Mishle, since we just did Mishle before Koheles. Mishle chapter 16, sentence 26. Nefesh amel, amalalo. Which usage of amal is that? Nefesh amel, amalalo.
Bad conduct.
Is it?
Bad conduct.
That's funny. I would not have assumed that. I wouldn't have rendered it as bad conduct. Who has a translation? Ricky, were you reading out of a translation, or was that your own?
It sounds like to.
So, since it has both possible meanings, it's hard for me to say what it sounds like. But someone who's working with an English Tanakh, what do you have there for Mishle chapter 16, sentence 26?
It sounds like somebody torturing or bothering.
Not necessarily. I need someone who has an English translation. And no one has an English, has a Tanakh with an English translation? Bummer.
It says the working spirit.
The working spirit.
And works for itself.
Work toils for itself. Yeah, so it's according to their read. Which edition is that?
The stone.
Okay. So, according to that, it's struggle. It's talking about work, not about bad actions specifically, but just work and struggle in general. Rose.
Now I can ask, because you see, there's a big difference in my head if something is done to you, whereas if you're struggling. And this is a case in point, because here it says in English, the apprehend of a labor labors for him, because his hunger forces him on.
Yeah.
But he's struggling because he has to, but not...
Yes.
Otherwise, it's such a different thing. It means someone has done it to you.
Yes. No, they're two different things. One amal is when a person is struggling and working, and the other amal is bad action towards others, which may be towards the speaker, may not be. If you take a look in Mishle, go a little further ahead to chapter 24, sentence 2. You see it used the other way. Ki shod yehegel libam. It's talking about bad people. Anshei ra'ah. Ki shod yehegel libam. Their heart speaks shod. Shod is theft, despoiling, from people. Va'amal sifsehem tedaberna, and their lips speak amal. That's not struggle, that's bad conduct, doing bad things to others. So you get both uses in Mishle. Tehillim has many, many uses. And same thing for Eov. On the sheet, I didn't even bother listing all of them. But it shows up a bunch of times in Mishle and a bunch of times in Eov, and it's used both ways. So, in Koheles, yeah, Gita.
Yeah, the fact that amal is used for two disparate words makes me think, trying to figure out linguistically, if there's something they have in common.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
yeah.
If you are suffering, if someone's hurting you, that's bad behavior on their part.
So, there may be a connection.
That they're intertwined.
There may be a connection, and some want to make a connection, based on a third use of the word amal. And that is really an offshoot of one of them. And that is, we're going to see it in a little bit, the product of amal, the product of hard work, specifically wealth. There's an approach which we're going to see which suggests that amal means wealth, and that what it's referring to is either wealth as the product of struggle, or wealth undeservedly gained through bad action, and that the wealth itself is bad. So that could end up being the link, but you'll see. I'm getting there shortly. So amal in Koheles seems to be exclusively the struggle meaning, not the bad conduct meaning. And it is his verdict on much of human endeavor. Human endeavor is painful struggle. That's what it is. You know, to borrow a Yiddishism, schwer zu sein a Mensch. It's hard to be a person, it's hard to be a human being. That's what Koheles says. And it's his verdict on human endeavor. And I specifically say human endeavor because of source number 5, which we've seen before. Remember when we had the discussion about the contradictions in the book and how it doesn't fit the philosophy of Tanakh? And then why did they include it in Tanakh? And approach number 1 said, well, it starts and it ends with Torah, and therefore, that's how we will read the rest of the book. That's how we will read the rest of the book, is in that light. Approach number 1 says, since we know that that's his ideal, that's how we're supposed to reread everything. Actually, I had a chance while I was driving the other day to listen. My friend Rabbi Ziering did, years ago, when our Beit Midrash did Tanakh in a Day the first time. So we had 30-minute shiurim on each book in Tanakh. So he was the one who did Koheles. So I had the chance to listen to his shiur, and he had a very creative way of saying that. The idea that it begins and ends with Torah, and therefore we should reread what's in the middle. He said that, generally speaking, commentators, when they write their commentary, are not doing so having just read the book once. When you write a commentary, you read it more than once, you come up with your ideas, and then you write your commentary. It isn't just like one read and then here are my thoughts. So he says, Koheles is him presenting all of these very confusing ideas until you get to the end. When you get to the end, you say, his verdict is, you should have reverence for Hashem, you should fulfill the mitzvos. Now you have to go back and reread the entire book with that in mind, and that informs how you're going to read everything that was said earlier. So once you see the beginning is Torah and the end is Torah, now you go back through it and say, okay, now how do I reread the rest, having seen that? I hope I'm doing it justice. I've listened to it on double speed, but I think that's what he said. But take a look at source number 5. At the Gemara, in any case. The Gemara says, Trilaso divrei Torah, the beginning of Koheles is Torah. How? Because the text says, Mayisron la'adam b'chol amalo she'amol tachas ha'shamesh. What is the benefit for a person in all of his struggle, which he struggles beneath the sun? So that phrase, beneath the sun, is the key. Va'amri divrei Rabbi Yanai, they said in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yanai, since we know that this is a book that values God and Torah, therefore, we're going to explain it this way. Tachas HaShemesh Hu De'ein Lo. Beneath the sun, there is no benefit in your amal. But Kodem HaShemesh Yesh Lo. But that which is before the sun, meaning the Torah, which precedes the universe, that has benefit. That's the way that the Gemara explains it. So when I say to you that Koheles says human endeavor is struggle, and worthless struggle at that, he doesn't mean religious endeavor, he means specifically this worldly endeavor. Amal is Koheles' term for human endeavor, and in general it is painful and it is exhausting. As Ibn Ezra says in source number 6 on your sheet, very concisely, Kol amal b'sefer hazeh berov yegias ma'aseh. Every amal in this book is about the great exhaustion of human activity. That's what it is. It almost always refers to general toil, the general hard work, although we'll see a couple of other uses as well, like the kind of work that someone does in order to put bread on the table, like that kind of amal. If you take a look at chapter 2, sentence 18, the one that Ibn Ezra was commenting on, V'sanesi es kol amali sha'ani amel tachas hashamesh. I hate all of my amal, which I did under the sun. Sha'ani chenu la'adam she'yiyach harai. I'm going to leave it to whoever follows me. All this struggle, all this hard work that I'm engaged in, you know, it's all going to somebody else after me. I'm not happy. That's his statement. Now here I come back to what I said to Gita before. If you take a look on your sheet at source number 7, Professor Lewis Ginsberg, before I get to Ginsberg, I'm sorry, I need one line first. Chapter 2, sentence 19. Chapter 2, sentence 19, following up on the sentence where he says, hey, I'm leaving all my amal for the person after me. Umi yodea, who knows? Hechacham yihya osachal, the person who follows me. Is he going to be wise or is he going to be a fool? Right? And you read that knowing we attribute it to Shlomo HaMelech, to King Solomon, whose son Rehavam lost the kingdom, right, by overtaxing the people. So he says, who knows whether his son, whether his the person who comes after him will be wise or foolish? And he is going to have control of all my amal that I did and all that I planned on, the wisdom I had under the sun. Gam ze havel. That's hevel also. So on that, in the Olam HaTanach edition, Professors Fox and Klein note that really amal is not so much the struggle as the product of the struggle. That's what I'm leaving to the person. I'm not leaving my struggle to them. I'm leaving what I earned with my struggle. The Rashbam actually says it also. Rashbam said that long before Professors Fox and Klein, commenting on sentence 24 in the same chapter, which also speaks of the person who eats and drinks there, actually, the Her'as Nafsho, Tov Ba'amalo. And he experiences the good life with his amal. So Rashbam says it means the product of his struggle. It means the wealth that he amassed. So now I refer you to the sheet in source number 7. Professor Lewis Ginsberg from JTS, in his Koheleth, in the foreword, says the following. Rashbam Omer Beperusho, Rashbam says in his commentary, which I just mentioned to you, Ba'amalo, mamono asher tarach bo, his mamon, his wealth for which he strained. Haresha amad Rashbam al kavanas amal b'shnei psukim elu, shehi mamon. So Rashbam explained amal in these sentences as wealth. Mitziah shechazra va'avda min hachakira, and Ginsberg says, you know, Rashbam said it, and then all of the academics and scholars over the years forgot that that was a meaning of the word amal. Lo barur im hirgish Rashbam shebechol hasugya aleph beis to beis chavav ubechol hasefer kulo shem haetzem amal af hu misparesh kimat tamid kana verachash. He says it's not clear to me whether Rashbam realized that this entire section from chapter 1 sentence 2 through chapter 2 26, the word amal always means wealth. And not only that, but in the entire book, it's almost always acquisition, whatever somebody acquired, he says. Aval hakara zumen achashuvos lavanas hasefer. He says, but this is one of the most important ideas you need to grasp in order to understand the book. You want to understand Koheles, you have to recognize that amal is not about the struggle, it's about the wealth. And he argues that point not only based on Koheles, but based on use of the word amal in ancient Near Eastern languages, as well as in rabbinic writing. And he argues that the idea is that the book is criticizing amassing wealth. It's not criticizing the work as much as it's criticizing the wealth. That's his argument. To which I like Professor Gordas's witty reaction. One second, Ricky. Take a look at number 8, where Professor Gordas gives us a witty response to that. Rashbam just said it in chapter 2, sentence 24. Professor Ginsburg says, this is all over the book. Gordas says, as our discussion will demonstrate, the restraint of the medieval scholar is far more justifiable than the extreme position adopted by his modern successor. I feel like I just heard Ibn Ezra say, Gamze Hevel. He writes in this appendix on Amal, appendix D in Gordas's work is on Amal, and he argues that it's an overreach by Ginsburg. But the message of criticizing then is much more about amassing the wealth, the struggle for it, than the wealth itself. Yes, Ricky.
I think it's enormously ironic that King Solomon criticizing amassing wealth. He amassed wealth. Did he
build a lot of
hospitals? Did he build a lot of hospitals? Did he build a lot of schools? Did he make sure that there were no poor people in his country?
Yes. Yes. No, Ricky. You got to go back and read Malachim. That's exactly what he did.
Say that again, please.
Go back to read Malachim again, because that's exactly what he did. He made sure there weren't poor people. Yes, he was feeding people. Yes, he was scattering gold and gems and so on. Yes.
Okay, and then he goes and he
criticizes the wealth that he amassed. Exactly right. He said, that's the idea in those who say that he writes this at the end of his life. He's looking back on all that he did and saying, Hevel, Amal, Kaas, and so on. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Shmulik.
The hospitals we don't know about. But we do know about him scattering and feeding others. So the message here is the toil / product of the toil, but really I think the emphasis is really on the toil itself, being something that's just painful and frustrating. It's not only about physical toil. Take a look, please, in chapter 8, sentence 17. And if you flip the sheet to source number 9, that will probably be helpful because that's what I'm going to be referring to. Chapter 8, sentence 17. He says, V'ra'isi es kol ma'asei ha'elokim. I saw all of the deeds of God. Ki lo yuchal ha'adam limtzoes ha'ma'asei asher na'asa tachas ha'shamesh. A person cannot find, meaning a person cannot grasp and understand all that is done beneath the sun. Asher ya'amol ha'adam levakesh velo yimtza, that a person will be a male to understand it, and he won't understand. Amal in that context is about philosophical investigation, trying to understand and not getting there. It tends to be something that is motivated by mundane desire. Take a look at chapter 4, sentence 4, please. What is the motivation for Amal in chapter 4, sentence 4? What's the motivation?
Jealousy of your neighbor?
Yeah, jealousy, exactly. Jealousy is the motivation for all this struggle. Look in chapter 6, sentence 7. This is very funny given what we read in Mishlei just before. What was it? what's the motivation?
What's the reference again?
Earning money to buy food, I guess.
Yeah, to buy food. Earning money in order to feed himself. I say that it's interesting because in Mishlei, when we were looking at the uses of the word Amal in Mishlei, in chapter 16, 26, we said, Nefesh Amel Amalalo ki achap alav pihu. He needs it for his mouth. He is hungry. This is another of those cases in which Shlomo is quoting himself, so to speak. We saw it from Malachim to Koheles. Here we get it from Mishlei to Koheles. It's not so surprising. I mean, they're wisdom literature. But the point is that the motivation for Amal, sometimes it's emotional, it's jealousy, and sometimes it's hunger. You want to eat. So therefore you are a male. But as a general rule, yes, Gita.
I got a weird English thing here on Pesach on 7. This is a proverb quoted to substantiate the view that the stillborn child has gratification rather than the other.
Yeah, because they're trying to present it to you in the context in chapter 6, where he's saying better that somebody never have seen this world than that he lived a full life. So they're just trying to explain how that fits.
Weird. Okay.
Yeah. So as a general rule, Amal is futile and leads only to Hevel. The two go hand in hand. So if you go back to the beginning of the book, chapter 1, sentence 3, right after he says, Havel Havalim, write that introductory line, Havel Havalim, Amar Koheles, Havel Havalim, Hakol Havel, everything is Hevel, Ma Yisron La'adam, what benefit is there for a person? Bechol Amalo, Sheyamol, Tachas HaShamesh, in all of the Amal that he engages in under the sun, you don't gain anything. And he uses it that way a lot. If you look at the fourth bullet point in number 9, I gave you a bunch of verses, but I want to just look at one passage. Chapter 5, sentences 14 to 16. Because this really captures it quite nicely, if you can use the word nice in this context. Chapter 5, sentence 14. Kasher yatsa mi beten imo, as he left the womb of his mother, arom yashuv laleches kesheba, he will go back unclothed like he emerged. Uma lo yisa ba'amalo, sheyolech biyado, and he isn't going to take anything for his amal to go with him. And he continues to say, v'gamzo ra'achola kolumas sheba ken yelech. He says, this is terrible. As he entered, so he goes. Uma yisron lo sheyamol laruach. What is his benefit in the amal that he does for the wind? The wind being something that, again, is not substantive. Hang on, Susan. If there is a benefit to the amal, the benefit goes to those who don't deserve it. Right? We saw that just before in chapter 2, sentence 18. In which he said, I hate my amal that I did under the sun, leaving it for whoever comes after me, who may be wise, who may be foolish, I have no idea. And he goes on and on in that passage about amal, amal, amal. It's a constant there until you get to sentence 24, that whole unit. He says, even if there is a benefit, it's going to someone who doesn't deserve it, and it just causes agitation and frustration. If you jump to chapter 4, sentence 8. He talks about a lonely person, and he says, Yesh echad ve'ein sheni. We've talked about this verse before. You have somebody who is alone, and he doesn't have a second person with him. Gam bein va'ach ein lo. He has no son, he has no brother. Ve'ein keitz v'chol amalo. There is no end to his amal. Gam eino lo sisba osher, and his eyes are never filled with wealth. He keeps wanting more. Ulemi ani amel. And he has to stop and say at some point, who am I amel for? Umchaseres nafshimi tova, causing myself to lack good things because I'm busy running on the hamster wheel. Gamze Hevel. This is Hevel v'inyan Yavrahu, and it's a bad thing. So Amal is futile, and it leads to Hevel. Yes, Susan. Yeah.
But I'm listening to this, and I think to myself, at the end of Job, the reason he's putting us through all this torture when we read Job was to get to the end and find out there's a reason for it. And it seems to me this is the same sort of setup. We're going through such depression, such horrible things, and then at the end, we're going to find, I don't know if the word solution, or we're going to find how to live with.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yes.
It seems so heavy to go, like, it's very hard to take everything we're hearing and wait till, at the end, don't worry, I'm going to guide you so you can survive this.
Right. I mean, unlike Eov, you get the guidance along the way, meaning it's not true that he only has, the guidance at the end. He gives guidance throughout the book about what one should spend his time on. That's where I wanted to go after we talk about, these key terms and human emotions and so on. I want to pick out the advice he gives.
Because it's getting real depressing.
Yeah.
Now, I think reading the book is among.
Okay. Gita, what were you going to say?
Just laughing.
Just laughing. Okay. So, Koheles does acknowledge, and this is just in time, this is just in time for the depressed crowd. Koheles does acknowledge that sometimes Amal may bear fruit. So, we were just looking at chapter 4, sentence 8, about the guy who's alone and just keeps on working and starving himself of good things. Take a look at chapter 4, sentence 9, in which he says, Tovim ashnayim min ha'echad. Better if you have two people than if you have one. Asher yesh lahem sachar tov ba'amalam. Because then they can profit off of their amal. Merge your efforts with somebody else, and maybe that will help you. That's one way. If it's social, it can be good. Another is when you enjoy the work itself. If you take a look at source number 11 on the sheet, Ibn Ezra says, he's commenting on, you should probably see the verse actually, go back to chapter 2, sentence 10. We're going to need it anyway in a moment. V'chol asher sha'alu einai lo atzalti mehem, as Ricky said, Shlomo says, all that my eyes sought, I didn't hold back from them. Lomanati esli bi mikol simcha. I didn't keep my heart from any joy. Ki libi sameach mikol amali. My heart was happy with all of my struggle. V'zay achaki mikol amali. And that was what I got out of all of my struggle. Says Ibn Ezra, what does that mean? Take a look at number 11. V'samachti, or v'simchasi ba'amali, my joy in my amal, Haisa schar yegiasi. That was my reward for my exhaustion. Vehi levada haisa chalki. That alone was my portion. What did I get out of all the work? I liked my work. I may have had to struggle constantly, but I enjoyed that. Building buildings was fun. That's the statement. If you enjoy the work itself, there is a benefit to it. So you have two sources of benefit so far. One, when the work is social. Two, when you enjoy the work. Three, when you keep your expectations low.
This sounds like your credo.
This is perhaps valuable. When you keep your expectations low, if all you expect, I see this, Ricky, I'm going to ask you to stop now because I need to be able to talk. When all you expect is short-term profit, then it'll come out okay. So in chapter 2, sentences 10 and 11, right, where he talks about his work and how he got satisfaction from this, right? And he says, look, that was my chelek, right? Look at sentence 11. Ufanisi ani b'chol ma'asai she'asu yadai. I turned myself to, I paid attention to all of the deeds that I had done. Uve amal she'amalti la'asos, and all of my amal. V'hinei hakol hevel ru'us ruach. He says, yeah, it's all hevel. It's all ru'us ruach, which is a term we're going to have to come back to. Ve'ein yisroh da'chaz ha'shamesh. There is no benefit under the sun. So after he said, I enjoyed the work, but it was all hevel. Don't kid yourself. Jump ahead to chapter 5, sentence 17. He says, V'ra'isi es kol ma'asei ha'elokim. I saw all of the deeds of God. Ki lo yuchal ha'adam l'mtzoes ha'ma'asei asher na'asa tachas ha'shamesh. A person cannot find, they cannot grasp all that is done under the sun. Bishel asher ya'amol ha'adam levakesh velo yimtza. We just talked about this. This was chapter 5, sentence 17, right? We said it before. The philosophical speculation, he's not going to find. You can't grasp and understand everything that that is out there. That's limited. You can't go beyond. Oh, you know why? That wasn't the verse I wanted. That was 8:17. Never mind. I wanted 5:17. I'm reading it. I'm like, is that really making the point? 5:17. Hine asher ra'isi ani, as I saw. Tov asher yafeh le'echol v'lishtos. It's good to eat and drink. V'lir'os tova b'chol amalo she'yamol tachas hashamesh. And to see good in all of the amal you perform under the sun, mispar yimei chayav asher nasan lohu elokim ki hu chalko, for however long God lets you live. Eat and drink. He says, eat and drink and get whatever satisfaction you can out of your amal. Keep your expectations low, is what he's saying. Now we jump ahead to chapter 8, sentence 15. He says, Vishibachti anies hasimcha. I praise happiness. Asher in tov la'adam tachas ha'shemesh kiim le'echol v'lishtos v'lismoach. He says, there's nothing good for a person other than eat, drink, and be merry. V'hu yilvenu ba'amalo, it will accompany him in his amal. Yimei chayav asher nasan lo elokim tachas ha'shemesh, for however long he's going to live under the sun. Finally, chapter 9, sentence 9. Re'ei chayim im isha asher ahavta kol yimei hevlecha. See life with your spouse you love all your life of hevel, the days of your life of hevel, which God gives you under the sun, all your days of hevel. Ki hu chakecha b'chayim, because that's what you're getting in life. Uva amalcha asher ata amel tachas hashamesh, and your amal that you have under the sun. That's all you're getting. Now, there's a fundamental problem. Because we've now seen several verses in which he said, as long as you recognize that this is all you get, you know, a little bit of happiness here, eat, drink, be merry, have a relationship, and that's your benefit. But in the beginning, he said, Ma yisron la'adam v'chol amalo. What yisron is there? What benefit is there for a person in all the amal? Well, now I know there is. So take a look at Professor Fox in number 12 with a very interesting idea. Nir'ah shekoheles mavchin bein hamusag chelek ubein hamusag yitaron. You have to pay attention to the language in the Hebrew. The word chelek and the word yitaron are two different things to koheles. Chelek hu hana'a rig'it. Chelek is a temporary pleasure. Cholefes, it's passing. Ba'osha yitaron, hu to'elas bas kayama. Yitaron, that refers to an enduring benefit. Matmedet, it's ongoing. Mashu she'efshar l'smoch alav v'laseis bo emun, is something you can rely on, something that you can put your trust in. So he says, chelek, so if you take a look at the verse we just read, In chapter 9, sentence 9, ki hu chelkecha b'chayim. That is your chelek. Your chelek is something that you have right now. It's a portion. It's what you get right now. That's it. He had the word also back in chapter 5, sentence 18. He used chelek. As opposed to yitaron, there is no yitaron. There's nothing enduring. There's nothing lasting. Now, I have to call Fox on the fact that chapter 2, sentence 21, says, Ki yesh adam sha'amalo b'chokhma uvedas uvechisharon. There are people whose amal is in wisdom and understanding and with talent. Ula adam shalo amal bo yitnenu chelko. And he's going to give his chelek to somebody who didn't work at it. But according to Fox's definition of chelek, you can't give your chelek to somebody else. That's the whole point. Chelek is just this immediate passing thing. So, alright. It doesn't work in all cases. But point being, and then I'll take the comment, we have identified so far three, there's going to be a fourth, but we have identified so far three different ways that you may get fruit from your amal. One, when you can do it with others. Two, when you enjoy the work. And three, when all you're looking for is a short-term benefit. Then you can get something from it. There's going to be a fourth.
As you were going through some of the benefits, one of the parts when he was talking about eating and drinking and enjoying it, there was a reference to thanking, to gratitude. I don't remember the word that jumped at me, which makes me think that he's also trying to say that you should be grateful to Hashem, that you should be grateful.
So I don't remember him using the term gratitude.
No, you didn't say that. But I lost that reference.
So well, if you go back to source number 10 on the sheet, that's where the references were that we've been talking about. So maybe go through those verses and you'll see it.
I don't have.
But I don't want you to miss what's coming next, which is relevant for what you're saying. It's the fourth kind of fruit that amal may bear, or the fourth situation in which amal bears fruit. Take a look at chapter 5, sentence 18. And this is the verse that I read before when I was trying to read chapter 8. But now I really want chapter 5. Or I read chapter 8 when I was trying to refer to 5, whatever it was that I did before. It doesn't matter. The point isn't that. He says, "Gam kol ha'adam asher nasan lo ha'elokim osher u'nechasim, a person to whom God gives wealth and assets, v'shlito le'achol mimenu v'laseis es chelko, and Hashem gives him the power to eat from it and to take his chelek, right, which Fox will say is temporary, v'lismoach ba'amalo, and to rejoice in his amal, zo matas elokim hi, this is a gift from God." That's what you were thinking of. So the fourth kind of benefit from amal is when Hashem gives you benefit. You may benefit from your amal if Hashem chooses to hand it to you.
I was adding the necessity to bless Hashem.
Got it. Perfect. Okay. Take a look on the sheet at source number 13. Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah. There are four things that are hidden from people. Seven things. And these are the seven. Yom Hamisa, day of death. Meaning to know when. Yom Hanachama, the day of consolation. Va'omek Hadin, the depth of judgment, meaning divine judgment. Ve'en Adam Yodea Bamehu Mistaker. Read that as Mistaker, not Mishtaker. He says the person doesn't know how he's going to make a profit. Ve'ein adam yodea ma b'libo shel chaveiro. You can't know what someone else is thinking. Ve'ein adam yodea ma b'ibura shel isha. You can't know what's in a woman's pregnancy, at least not until there's an ultrasound anyway. Umalchus harasha emasai nofeles. And when will the evil empire fall? And then it goes on to quote verses to support each of these elements of ignorance for a human being. And he says, Ve'ein adam yodeh b'meu mistaker. You don't know how you're going to make a profit. Dichsiv matas Elokim hi. Like the verse says here, it's a gift from God. That's interesting that it actually, this edition of Bereishis Rabbah has a mistake. It says Koheles Gimel, but we know, we just read the sentence. It's Koheles Hey. That's a typo. Okay. In any case, the bottom line out of all of this, right, everything we've said, I didn't think we were going to spend the whole hour on Amal. There's sort of, that's like a meta comment on Koheles right there. But in any case, the message is human existence is painful, and it only brings satisfaction if you have company or if you happen to like the hard work you're doing, or if you have low expectations, or if God chooses to send you something. And going back to our three approaches to the book, either this is all just talking about non-Torah existence and endeavor, right? And this is all confined to Tachas HaShemesh, that which is under the sun. But if you're engaged spiritually, that's a whole different thing. That's number one. Number two, approach number two, and approach number three, this is the human perspective on our lives. Either, as Rabbi Angel said it in approach number two, we are just confused as we look out at the world, and this is an expression of our experience. Or, as I said in approach number three, it's our statement that the world isn't about us, and it's not optimized for us. And therefore, the work that we do is very often not going to bring satisfaction. So what I want to do next week is do the emotions of human endeavor. I want to talk about ka'as. I want to talk about ruach ra'ah, which is rayon ruach or ra'us ruach. It shows up with different terms here. I want to spend some time talking about simcha, happiness, because it does have a place in the book. And then to move on from that to probably to the advice Koheles has to give us for how we live. I'm going to note what I said in the beginning before we started the shiur. June 27th is supposed to be the last week of the shiur, but I can't give a shiur that day. I think what I would like to do is just skip that week and do the last session July 4th. So I hope people can participate. I hope Zoom works wherever you're traveling. But that's what I'd like to do.